The holidays are behind us, and you know what that means. It's tax season. But do you know who your tax preparer will be? Hi, I'm Rob West. It's gone largely unnoticed, but there's a nationwide shortage of CPAs and accounting talent in general. Waiting to line up your tax preparer could cause problems, but I'll tell you how to avoid them. And then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. So first of all, when you hire someone to do your taxes, the odds are that person will either be a CPA, a certified public accountant, or an enrolled agent. Both are qualified to prepare and file taxes for other people, although the CPA requirements are much stricter than those of an enrolled agent. Some attorneys also specialize in tax law. The problem is, right now, there's a shortage of CPAs and enrolled agents. In particular, not enough young people are choosing those fields. One major firm even started hiring high school interns at $22 an hour to entice them into becoming CPAs. Now, this may become not only an inconvenience to a lot of people this tax season, but a real danger. If folks become desperate to find tax professionals to file their returns, it opens the door to unscrupulous tax preparers who may even be falsifying their credentials. The IRS suggests a number of ways to protect yourself from these fraudsters who come out of the woodwork every tax season to perpetrate refund fraud, identity theft, and other scams. Look for a preparer who's available year-round. If you're audited, you certainly want your tax preparer available to represent you. So obviously you want to avoid fly-by-night operations. When interviewing a tax preparer, ask for their IRS Preparer Tax Identification Number, or PTIN. Paid tax return preparers are required to register with the IRS, obtain a PTIN, and enter it on any returns they prepare. You can check whether a tax preparer has done this by going to IRS.gov and looking them up in the Directory of Federal Tax Return Preparers. This tool can also help you locate a preparer in your area with the qualifications you're seeking. You should also ask if the preparer has a professional credential, such as a CPA or enrolled agent. Ask about continuing education classes they've taken. Tax laws are complex and change frequently. Preparers have to stay up to date on tax topics. You can also check on the history of a tax preparer. For CPAs, check with the State Board of Accountancy. For enrolled agents, go to IRS.gov and search for Verify Enrolled Agent Status. For attorneys, check with their State Bar Association. Then you also want to ask about fees. Avoid preparers who base their fees on a percentage of their client's refund, or if they brag their refunds are bigger than the competition. Do not give any personal information or documents to a preparer unless you've checked them out and are satisfied that they're legitimate. All a fraudster needs is your Social Security number to file a fraudulent return and steal your refund. You also may want to make sure the preparer offers IRS e-file and then ask to have your return filed that way. If the preparer can't or won't file electronically, that's a warning sign. Paid preparers who do taxes for more than 10 clients generally must file electronically. It's also the safest and most accurate way to file. Next, watch out for a tax preparer who doesn't ask you for records and receipts. Legitimate preparers need those documents and will always ask you for them, so be prepared. Here's another warning sign. If a preparer says they can e-file your return based simply on a pay stub, head for the door. They're required to use a W-2, and you'll need to provide it. You also need to understand the rules of representation. If you're audited, CPAs, enrolled agents, and attorneys all can represent you before the IRS in any situation. Non-credentialed preparers, including your cousin Bill, who's a whiz with numbers, cannot represent you if you're audited. The next one goes without saying, but let's say it anyway. Never sign a blank check or an incomplete return. Review the entire tax return and make sure it's complete before signing. Ask questions if something's not clear or looks inaccurate. Also, any refund should go directly to you, not into your preparer's bank account. To make sure, check the routing and bank account number on the completed return. Now, one way you can avoid any potential problem with your tax preparer is to look for a CPA, enrolled agent, or tax attorney with the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. Just go to faithfi.com and click Find a Professional. All right, your calls are next. 800-525-7000. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
All of us have done things that would bring us shame if it were exposed for all to see. Things we wish we could take back. People would look at us, we know, differently if they knew the dark things about our past. No one is exempt from this. But here's a thought. God already knows all of it. And yet, in His love, God assures us there's no reason to fear. Isaiah 54 tells us, "Do not be afraid. You will not be put to shame. You will not be humiliated. You will forget the shame of your youth." But how can the Lord say that? It's only because in Christ we're forgiven, and only in Christ we will never be put to shame. Anchor Devotional can help you spend more time in God's Word. Visit getanchor.com.
Healthcare is complicated. It doesn't have to be. If you don't love how your health insurance works, maybe it's time to leave traditional health insurance behind. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers you flexibility. Enroll anytime. Choose your own provider and select the program that fits your needs and budget. CHM is the original faith-based way of taking care of your medical bill costs. Learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
Is it really possible to rejoice in the Lord despite difficult people and circumstances? This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress opens to the book of Philippians, in which the Apostle Paul reveals how to experience outrageous joy in any and every situation. Learn how to live above your circumstances all this week on Pathway to Victory.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
We're grateful for support from Timothy Plan. For more than 30 years, they've served clients on a biblically responsible journey to invest in a way that honors God and gives dignity to people's lives. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services LLC.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing your questions today as we get into what's happening in your financial life, helping you navigate that in light of biblical wisdom. If you'd like to be a part of the broadcast today, it's pretty easy to do. Just pick up the phone and call 800-525-7000. Our team is standing by. They'll quickly find out what your question is. You can use your name or be anonymous. We'll try to get you on the air and see if we can help you make that next step in light of biblical truth. Again, that number with lines open right now, 800-525-7000, any financial question in play today. We're going to begin here in just a moment in Georgia with William. But first, in the news, private sector companies created a net 183,000 jobs in January, a figure modestly higher than the previous month. Economists had been expecting the new jobs number to be around 150,000. Now, analysts say that a stable labor market could give the Federal Reserve a reason to at least contemplate further interest rate cuts, although it seems as of late they're less inclined to do so. The payroll processing company ADP is reporting that workers' paychecks in January increased by an annual rate of 4.7%, and while a stable labor market might give the Fed incentive to consider more rate cuts, some economists warn that the prospect of tariffs could push the Fed to keep rates where they are, given that that could be inflationary. Tariffs increase the cost of imported goods, which contribute to overall inflation. The Fed is committed to lowering inflation, and its primary tool for that is higher interest rates. They've been fairly happy with how inflation has come down, even though we're not still at their target of 2%. I think we're riding at around 2.7%. Remember, that is, of course, cumulative, meaning we're slowing the rate of increase of prices. We're not going down. And so we're not backtracking any of that 9% inflation we saw a couple of years ago. So net net, all things are more expensive. I don't have to tell you that. You're experiencing that across the board, which makes staying on budget more challenging than ever. Remember, our lifestyle is the primary determinant of our financial success. Our ability to live within our means is key to being able to have the margin to fund those longer-term goals. And by the way, the data says that margin or cushion on a monthly basis is also key to something else: your ability to have conflict-free conversations around money in marriage as well, interestingly. So a lot of good reasons for you to dial into that spending plan despite expenses and prices up, rein in spending, and live within your means, no debt, better communication, and you can pursue your long-term goals. Remember, money is a tool. Through a biblical worldview, we understand money is a good gift from God. It's not evil. It's the love of money that's evil. And so we need to see it as a tool, use it to accomplish God's purposes, which means to provide for our families, to enjoy, to give it away, to invest in God-honoring companies. All of these things under the Lordship of Christ make money a really good and powerful tool to be used for His purposes. Well, we want to help you do that each day on this broadcast, and so you can call right now. We're going to dive into those questions. Whatever's happening in your financial life, pick up the phone, 800-525-7000. Sandy Dickinson standing by to take your calls today, and we'll look forward to getting you on the air. Let's do that right now. We're going to go to Georgia. William, you be first up, sir. How can I help?
Hey, how you doing, Rob?
I'm doing great.
I love your show. I listen to it every day going to work.
Awesome.
And you are very helpful in your financial questions and answers.
Great. Well, thank you for that, William.
Thank you. I have a credit card that I'm trying to get paid off. It's a debt that I accumulated, and I want to try to get it paid off as soon as possible.
Okay. Yeah, you know, the first question, William, is always, how did you get the debt? Was it just lifestyle spending beyond your means and, you know, just not having enough money at the end of the month, and so it just, you know, it was put on the credit card? Or was there a single event that led to the credit card debt?
It was just lifestyle at
okay.
that time.
Yeah. And so have you been able to correct that at this point?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you're able to pay the minimum payment, but you're not seeing that balance increase with new charges that you can't pay off. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, good. Because the last thing we'd want to do is try to solve the symptom of an underlying issue, which is a continuation of lifestyle spending beyond your means. Because, you know, if we just attack the symptom, even if we are able to get rid of it and we haven't corrected the disciplines and the behaviors that lead to living within your means, then, you know, you're going to call me back 6 months from now and tell me that the credit card debt is back. My preferred way of tackling this is something called debt management or credit counseling. You've maybe heard me mention this in the past on the program, but, you know, there's several ways you can deal with credit card debt. Option one is what's called loan or debt consolidation, where you take out a new loan and you pay off the credit cards with that new loan and hopefully with a lower interest rate. The challenge with that is, number one, it takes the pressure off, so it undermines the idea that we want to, you know, really change our behavior. But number two is, even if the credit card comes down, there's usually some fees associated with taking out that new loan, and it may have a longer payback period. So even though the interest rate's lower, you may end up sending, you know, the same or more in interest. So I don't like that option. The second option is something called debt settlement, where these companies will encourage you to stop paying the bill, let it get into a collection status, and then they're going to come behind that and try to negotiate a reduced payoff or a payment plan of some sort. I wouldn't get anywhere near that. There's a lot of fraud and bad actors in that space. It also would require that you trash your credit and get into a collection status, and you don't want that. So the third option, other than just trying to pay this yourself, is debt management. And essentially what's going to happen is this card or cards would be put into a credit counseling program through a not-for-profit credit counseling agency. It's going to stay right where it is at whatever creditors you have. If you're with Capital One, it's going to stay with Capital One. But they're going to drop the interest rate from whatever it is today to their credit counseling rate. That's typically between 0 and 8%, could go as high as 12. It's going to be lower than what you're paying right now. And the idea is that, you know, that level monthly payment that you would have, which is probably going to be around 3% of the balance. So if you've got $4,000 in debt, you're going to be talking, you know, maybe $120 a month, maybe a little more. That level payment combined with that reduced interest rate is going to help you pay that off 80% faster. And, you know, I really like that approach a lot. We've had thousands of our listeners do it, and we only get a good response on it. The company that I would work with is our friends at Christian Credit Counselors, William, and you'll find them on the web at christiancreditcounselors.org. Is that helpful, and do you have any questions on that?
Oh, yeah, that's very helpful. Now, I think that's what I want to go with.
Okay, good. Yeah, christiancreditcounselors.org. You know, a lot of people want to know what's going to happen to my credit score. And I will tell you, there's no impact to the credit score by virtue of you being in a credit counseling program. It's not a part of the algorithm. The only thing that could temporarily reduce your score is just the fact that when you put the card in the program, it will be suspended or canceled. You could reopen it down the road if you want to use it just for budgeted items. But again, it's very minor, it's temporary, and the credit counseling program itself doesn't factor into the credit score. So that's good news. You can reach them again, William, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Thanks for calling. Thanks for being on the program today. We'll be right back.
Streaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we removed the letters ing. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical.
We are grateful for support from Crossmark Global Investments. They are a faith-based firm with a goal of offering values-based investments to help align financial choices and faith, ensuring a portfolio that reflects what matters most. Crossmark does this through investment solutions that span the capital market spectrum, from large cap to small cap strategies, including equity, fixed income, and balanced strategies. They are led by industry veteran Bob Dahl, CFA, a regular guest on the Faith and Finance program. More information is available at crossmarkglobal.com.
You know, most news outlets today don't just deliver information. They try to make us believe wrong is right and evil is good. Not American Family News. You know you'll get accurate information from a Christian perspective because, let's face it, God's Word is the real measure of truth and morality. Any impact on us and our families won't be hidden. Get your news from the source more and more people are choosing as their go-to. American Family News, on the air and online at afn.net.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Wildman, Associate Director of the AFA Foundation. We exist to help our supporters to leave a lasting legacy for years to come. We would love to speak with you regarding your situation to help put in place a lifetime income while also giving to the ministry of AFA and AFR. You can reach out to us by phone or email at 1-800-326-4543, extension 345.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions for the remainder of the broadcast. We've got room for you. You can call right now, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Let's go out to Tennessee. Hi, Kim. How can I help?
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I love your show.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question is about tithing. I'm a widow, and I earn my income is $36,000. I don't have any investments other than my savings account and occasionally CDs. I did earn $12,000 this year, and from the CDs and the savings account. But I just feel like I'm not giving enough. I gave about $1,000 to my church and to other charities that I donate to. Spent about $1,800 on doctors and prescriptions, but I don't have any other debt.
Yeah, yeah. And so your big thought here is really just how do I give more, and what does that look like?
We always gave when my husband was alive, and now I feel like I'm not giving enough, but I'm also a little concerned about the future, paying for perhaps a senior assisted living facility is very expensive, and my net worth is about $300,000, which isn't that much. So, you know, thinking about the future, 83 years old. So what is your opinion?
Yeah. Well, a couple of thoughts. I mean, number one, I love that you want to be generous and you want to give a tithe. And it sounds like you've been a giver throughout your entire life, you and your husband, and now you're continuing that. And that's great. I think that honors the Lord. I think that's clearly part of his plan, is that we're to take a portion of what he has entrusted to us and put it back into circulation in God's economy. And there's a virtuous cycle that takes place there. And we experience joy and the connection to God's activity. And it also, I think, calibrates our hearts to God's when we give, because the very act of giving requires that we hold it loosely and give it generously. And there's a trust element, because it's a demonstration of our recognition that God owns it all when we give, because if we thought it was dependent upon us, we'd hold it with a clenched fist. But because we know God is faithful and our provider, we can give and give as an act of worship. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I love the Old Testament tithe as a good starting point, a guideline for our giving. You know, we give systematically and proportionately on the increase, and I think we see that modeled throughout Scripture. But I think those of us who have seen the cross probably want to see that tithe as a beginning point, not an ending point, because we also see in the New Testament giving that's sacrificial. The most famous giver in the New Testament was the widow who gave out of her poverty. We know we're not to give under compulsion. We're to give cheerfully and And so I think that's the right approach. We also know to whom much is given, much is required. And we live in the most prosperous nation in the history of the world. So I think there's a responsibility that we have as well. And yet we also see that good stewardship, Kim, involves planning for the future. And so we talk a lot on this program about setting a financial finish line, both in terms of lifestyle spending, and there's a number of approaches you can take on that, but also in terms of accumulation. And I would say, you know, at 83 with $300,000 in the bank and no debt and living off modestly off of Social Security without any investments, I think you're in a good spot in the sense that, you know, you're not upside down on your spending and you don't have a lot of debt. But I certainly don't think you've overaccumulated because, to your point, you know, we know 75% of Americans 65 years and older will need some form of long-term care, you know, at some point in their lives, usually for a couple of years, and that can be really expensive. What I would say is for folks that, you know, usually have between $200,000 and $2 million, which is a big swath of people, you might want to look at long-term care insurance. However, I will say on your fixed income, it's probably going to be too expensive just because long-term care insurance policies are pricey and they go up over time as the, you know, rising cost of healthcare impacts them. So what I would say is, you know, I think you stay the course. I think you continue to give as the Lord leads. But I also think you recognize that if you were to need some sort of long-term care, whether that's in-home care or assisted living or full nursing care, you'd have to spend down your assets. And then if you got down to a certain level, you could rely on a Medicaid for that. And that's why it's there. And so you could tap into that and you'd have to be, of course, in a Medicaid approved facility. But I think there's this balance or this tension that we all experience of how much do we give away right now and how much do we save for the future? And I think that's what the Lord wants. He wants us to work through that through prayer and trusting him and following his leading and knowing at the end of the day, he will provide. So I would say continue to give as the Lord leads. But I think you're perfectly appropriate in saying, listen, I've been giving on this Social Security income because I've been a faithful tither. So probably, you know, only 40 or maybe 40 to 50% of what you're getting back every month would be considered the principal portion that you've already tithed on. The other half you would probably consider the increase. Because it's been in the Social Security Trust Fund and growing. And if you look at a typical life expectancy, it's usually about 60-40, 40 a return of principal, 60 would be the gain portion. So if you wanted to tithe on some of it, you could. But again, the Lord's not an accountant. He wants our hearts. And so I think it's really just a matter of trusting him and following his leading in what you ultimately decide to give. Does that make sense?
I think so. In other words, I should not just consider the 10%. I should just give as I see the needs around me.
I think
me.
That's right. I mean, listen, if you have a conviction to give a tithe on Social Security, everything we get is a gracious gift from God. So I would never want to hold you back from that. What I'm saying is I think you need to follow the leading of the Lord. I think you need to pray about it. And I think you do need to recognize there's probably, well, there's certainly a portion of what you're getting every month from Social Security that you've already tithed on. So if your concern is the tithe, at the most, it'd probably be about half of that check that would not yet have been tithed on at this point. Stay on the line. We'll finish off the air. We'll be right back.
Empty stomachs, waterborne illnesses, hopelessness. These are harsh realities for impoverished African children, but you can make a difference. Join with Cross International to share the love of Jesus with a child in critical need today. Each gift of $62 provides a child with life-saving resources. Give now at crossinternational.org/faith or 866-843-9500 and help kids go from barely surviving to thriving.
Have you added AFR on Roku? With it, you can quickly access AFR programming live.
I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View.
The majority of Americans actually want to live in reality.
As well as podcasts of all your favorite shows.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7.
AFR on Roku is another way to stay informed, equipped, and motivated as we join together to restore godly values in our nation. AFR on Roku. Add it today.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. If you have money in an investment account, you know sometimes the stock market can seem like a roller coaster. But it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind as a do-it-yourself investor, no matter what's happening in the market. A short video webinar about that is available at soundmindinvesting.org. Financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Every day we hear life-changing stories from listeners just like you who see money and possessions as tools to invite more people into God's kingdom. Instead of chasing wealth, you've chosen to embrace God as your source of love and provision. At FaithFi, we're passionate about meeting people where they live and work through our national radio program, app, resources, and website to influence widespread positive change in our culture. Please consider becoming a monthly partner at faithfi.com/give.
AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
You're young. You don't go to the doctor that often. Yet health insurance is still so expensive. If your health insurance costs too much, maybe you should switch to an affordable alternative. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers programs starting under $100 per month. Check off the affordable box on your list and get back to what you really love, running your business or caring for your kids, and have peace of mind while doing it. Visit chministries.org/faithfi to enroll today.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today. We've got lines open. We're ready for you. 800-525-7000. Any financial question, 800-525-7000. Before the break, we were talking to Kim in Tennessee, and we were talking about tithing on Social Security. But Kim, I know you had a second question. Go ahead with that.
Yes, and in 2009, we bought our home. We paid $130,000 for it. It was a bank-owned home. So we did put a lot of money into it. Well, not a lot of money, but a significant amount. But now it's worth probably between $270,000 and $338,000, according to Zillow. I don't understand how the capital gains thing would work. Could you explain that to me, Rob?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to. You would enjoy, as a single filer, up to $250,000 in gains that would not be subject to capital gains tax, so long as you live in this home or lived in this home 2 out of the preceding 5 years from the date of the sale. So you take the date of the sale, you go back 5 years. If you lived in that home for 2 out of those 5 years as your primary residence, then you can set aside or exclude $250,000 in gains from capital gains tax. So let's just take your example here. You say this is a home you still live in, you have not sold. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. So you, let's say you sell it for $270,000, and you know you said that you all paid $130,000. So that'd be $140,000 in gains. Now you could further reduce those gains, that $140,000 in gain, by the amount that you put into the property that enhanced the value of the property. So if you did an addition, not maintenance, but you did things to improve the property, landscaping and things like that. All of those things that you put into that property, you'd work with a CPA on this, but that would reduce that gain. But I don't think you'd even need to go through that exercise, because even if you had nothing in way by way of improvements, we're talking about $140,000 in capital gains. And as I said, as a single filer, you get up to $250,000 in gains before you have to pay any capital gains tax, as long as you've lived there 2 out of the last 5 years.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah, that's good news. That means you can take 100% of that money. And what are you thinking, Kim? Are you thinking you'd buy something else, or where would you go from there?
Well, I want to stay in my home as long as I can, as long as I'm physically able to. More than likely, I would probably end up in a senior facility of some sort.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And so perhaps you'd have that money to kind of buy in to that senior facility, at that point. If you did decide you wanted to stay, the other thing that folks do in this season of life, going back to that need for maybe in-home care or something like that, is you could look at what's called a reverse mortgage, where essentially you could systematically pull the money out of the house, either through a line of credit or a monthly check. You'd never have to make a payment, and you could never owe more than the house is worth, which just means if you ever decide to sell it, or at your death when it's passed to your heirs and it's sold, whatever that balance is, the amount that you have taken out plus interest would have to be repaid out of the proceeds of the sale, but you could never owe more than the home is worth. That's guaranteed by the Federal Housing Administration. So that would be another option if you needed to boost your income and you wanted to stay right where you were. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes. Yeah.
So that's another option.
Rob.
All right. God bless you, Kim. We appreciate you being on the program today. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. I love the question that Kim asked about tithing on Social Security. And this is a really interesting one. And I actually did some math on this the other day, just because we had a lot of folks, where we do have a lot of folks that asked this question. And ChatGPT was actually pretty helpful on this as well. What I did was I did kind of a deep dive into looking at this question of what is a rule of thumb or a benchmark that we could use to say what percent of every check is considered a return of principal for what you've already paid into Social Security through FICA taxes, you and your employer, and what percent of every check is considered an increase or the gains that you got or that Social Security got, by holding onto your money and investing it, based on two things: the age you start taking Social Security and a typical life expectancy. Now, if you don't live the typical life expectancy, it's going to throw these percentages off. But we have to make some assumptions. So my assumption was, let's take somebody retiring at full retirement age, 67, and a typical life expectancy. And then let's look at another benchmark for somebody who starts at age 70 and goes for a typical life expectancy. Here's what it came out. Basically, if you go full retirement age for a typical life expectancy, you can assume that, and this is an estimate, but I think a pretty good one with some solid rationale behind it, you can assume that 40% of your check is a return of principal and 60% would be considered the investment gain. If you wait until age 70 because you wanted to get that check up about 25%, you would then use a 30-70 rule of thumb. If you waited till age 70, about 30% would be a return of principal. About 70% would be considered the gain. And so that would be a way that you could approach tithing on the portion that you haven't already tithed on. Now, as we always say when we have this conversation, you don't have to necessarily approach it in that kind of accountant style, if you will. A lot of people just say, listen, everything I get is a gracious gift from God, regardless of whether I've been a generous tither, on the gross income my whole life. I'm going to continue to give a tenth of everything that comes in the door. I love that. But others will say, no, I want to tithe on the increase. What's the increase? And so that's at least one approach you can use as you think about this 60-40 or 70-30 approach, depending on whether you take it at full retirement age or you wait until age 70. I know I'm getting in the weeds on this stuff, but some people care, and that's why I did the exercise. All right, let's go to Texas. Hi, Tammy. How can I help?
Hey, Rob. So I had a storm come through my house. It was high winds, and it destroyed our kitchen area, our roof, the foundation and everything. And so I've got this money that the insurance gave us. It was a little over $13,000. And our house is going to cost around $78,000 to $79,000 for repair. And so I've got this money sitting in a savings account, which is only receiving a 1% interest. So should I put that money into a different type of savings account to accrue a higher interest rate? And on top of that, I'm putting in anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 of my paycheck monthly into that savings account. So it's probably around $21,000 to $22,000 right now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's no reason why you wouldn't want to try to maximize that interest rate. I mean, you can get 4.5% right now pretty easily in an online savings account with FDIC insurance. I mean, that'd be an extra, on $22,000 over 12 months, although you may not have it there that long because I know you're probably actively doing these repairs. That'd be $880. So why not get as much as you can? I'd go to bankrate.com to find that account that is a good fit for you. High interest rate, highly rated, and FDIC insurance. Stay there. We'll finish up off the air. We'll be right back with our final segment.
How much control, unfortunately, the executive office does have to direct a lot of these procedures in terms of amnesty, what they can do, even though Congress needs to step it up. And we know constitutionally they should be making sure that the law reflects the American position. But law enforcement is the executive branch. And if you're not enforcing the law, then the law is merely just on paper.
Jenna Ellis in the morning, weekdays at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
As a nurse, I primarily work with children who are abused and exploited in trafficking, and I frequently see very unfair situations. We must talk about the issue of abuse. We can't base our actions on fear. We have to be faith-informed in what we do.
The Dr. Nurse Mama Show. For more from Dr. Jessica Peck, tune in at 2 p.m. Central on American Family Radio or on the podcast page at AFR.net.
FaithFi is grateful for support from One Ascent. One Ascent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. One Ascent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good, to explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values. More information is available at oneascent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. By the way, if you're trying to find an advisor, a financial planner, an investment advisor, a CPA, an insurance professional, one who shares your values and has gone through extensive training to apply a biblical worldview to their professional advice, they've had a pastor and client references, a regulatory review, they've met experience requirements, signed a statement of faith, a whole list of requirements. Well, that's the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. It's the only financial services industry designation for biblical financial advice, and it's what we trust here at FaithFi, brought to you by our parent organization, Kingdom Advisors. You can find a CKA in your area when you go to faithfi.com, click find a professional. That's faithfi.com. Let's go back to the phones. Louisiana is where Susan's located. How can I help?
Hey, Rob. I have a question that was spurred by a person who called a few minutes ago.
All righty.
And it was about having your house and selling it and capital gains. So you sell your house for $300,000. You get a single person, you get $250 off capital gains, but that $50,000, if you go and buy another house and use all that $300,000 for another house, do you not have to pay any capital gains?
Yeah, it's a great question, Susan. So there's a couple of things going on here in your example. Number one is, the capital gains tax has nothing to do with what you do with the money after you sell it. So whether you stick it in the bank or you take it and you buy another property, that has no bearing on whether or not you have to pay capital gains tax. If you owe capital gains after the sale, then you're going to pay the gain regardless of your next move with the money. Now, I will say that using your example, though, you wouldn't have any capital gain for in all likelihood, because in your example, you said, what if the house sells for $300,000 and you get $250,000, but you don't get $250,000 based on the sale price. You get, as a single person who's lived in the home two out of the last 5 years, you get $250,000 in gain. And so what that would mean is that, you know, let's say you bought that house for $50,000, you know, 4 decades ago, and it's appreciated all the way to $300,000. Well, you've got a $250,000 gain, and you would be able to set 100% of that aside and not pay any capital gains tax on it. Because again, it's not based on the selling price. It's based on the gain, which is the difference between the selling price and the original purchase price. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And well, let me ask you, because I remember years ago when I was just getting started that they said, oh, if you sell your house and buy another one in so many years, da, 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 da. Did the law change or did I just hear it wrong?
Well, no, you're talking about an investment property. It's something called a 1031 exchange, but it doesn't have anything to do with your primary residence and what we're talking about here with this $250,000 capital gain exclusion. That has to do with if you had a second home, let's say as a rental property, and you have a gain on that because you're selling it. If you take that gain and you roll it into another rental property, it has to be a similar type of property, and it's got to be an investment property, not your primary residence. But if you identify a new property within 90 days and you roll it into it and you close within 180 days, 6 months, investment property to investment property, then essentially you can push that capital gain forward and kick the can down the road and not pay it right now. But that doesn't apply to your primary residence.
Okay. Well, that's good. And I think I've done some additions, like I've added driveway and, you know, made it larger and stuff. So that kind of stuff I can subtract.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So you would take your selling price minus your original purchase price, minus those improvements that enhance the value of the property, minus any transaction costs for the sale, and the result is your gain. And if that's less than $250,000 and you've lived there two out of the last 5 years, then you don't have any capital gains whatsoever. If it's more than $250,000 after you do all that, then you would add it to your other taxable income. And then depending on what that total is, you'd either be at 0%, 15%, or 20% as a long-term capital gain.
Okay, well, that brought up another subject. So is capital gain tax the same rate that your income tax is?
It is not. No. So your federal income tax, you know, it goes with the various tax brackets that exist today from, you know, essentially 10 to 37%, I believe, is at the top. Whereas the capital gain, long-term capital gains rates are a completely different set of rates. And there's only three brackets. There's the 0% bracket, and then there's the 15 and the 20%.
Okay.
And that has to do with how much total taxable income you have. And so, for instance, for 2025, if you're single and your taxable income is under $47,000, then you're at zero. But keep in mind that taxable income includes the capital gain that you would be realizing. And that gets added in. If it's between $47,000 and $518,000, which is where most people fall, you'd be at 15%. Over $518,000, you'd be at 20%.
Right. And I was going to say, if I made $50,000 on the house right there, that puts me over the 40 whatever thousand.
That's exactly right.
If I didn't have any other money.
Okay, that's exactly right.
Thank you so much, Rob.
But keep in mind, if this was a home you lived in 2 out of the last 5 years, then it doesn't apply because your $50,000 in gain would be under the $250,000 exclusion.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad we could help today. Thanks for calling. Let's go to North Carolina. Dennis, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Rob, for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a real quick question. I have a friend who had a 401k plan with a company. I don't know, it was about 15 or 20 years ago. He's been trying to chase down that money. I think he said he had about $15,000 at that time. But he's getting a runaround, and he don't know where to go. He's gone. The company that he was with sold out to another company. Is there any way he can recover that?
Yeah, you know, it's not easy, but it's worth doing the legwork on it. He could contact his former employer that I realize the company's been bought out. And what he's trying to find is who, is the plan administrator currently. So whatever plan administrator was in place prior to the company being sold, that plan administrator was replaced. But all of that paperwork and all those legacy accounts are now with the new plan administrator. And so you need to figure out who that is. You could check old pay stubs or tax forms to see, or you want to look for a statement from the plan administrator. Contact them, find out who the new plan administrator is using his Social Security number. He could also check two places. One would be there's a National Registry of Unclaimed Retirement Benefits. And he could do a search there. The website is unclaimedretirementbenefits.com, and that would be worth a search. Most states also have an unclaimed property database, and he could check that as well, just with a simple internet search. So I would say try to chase down the old plan administrator and find out who the new plan administrator is from his old statements, or just by calling the HR department of the new company and asking. And then secondly, search those unclaimed retirement benefits databases.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And I love your show, and I appreciate all you do for everyone.
Well, thank you, Dennis. That's very kind of you, sir. Call anytime. Let's finish up today in Virginia. Hi, Steve. How can I help?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having taking the call. Just
sure.
Real quickly, we have a younger family member and his wife, and they are going to be moving out of a rental situation this summer. They're really wanting to buy, and they've asked us for advice on, what they should consider in knowing whether this is a good time or if they are even able to.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know some good questions to ask or have them ask themselves, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the key here, Steve, just especially given home affordability and how challenging it is right now with these prices so high and interest rates where they are, even though they're at pretty typical levels long term, historically, they're quite a bit higher than what we've gotten accustomed to the last couple of decades, sitting at around, close to 7% when, we got really comfortable with those 2% and 3% rates. So I think given all of that, the key is not about whether this is the right time to buy from the housing market standpoint. I think it's a fine time to buy, and they might need to plan to refinance, 2 or 3 years down the road. The big question is their financial readiness. Because the last thing we would want them to do is to buy too much house and be plagued with the challenge of balancing the budget because so much is going out the door in the housing category. The three big budget busters are housing, transportation, and food. And this is the hardest one if you buy too much house to unwind just because of all the cost related. So the things I would be asking are, number one, do you have 20% to put down? If not, let's wait and save. If you do, can you end up with a mortgage payment, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance that's less than 25% of your take-home pay? Certainly no more than 30%, because that's going to ensure that there's enough left for everything else. And then thirdly, have they counted the costs of everything else? Being able to put something aside for maintenance? Have they investigated how much the utilities would be and those types of things? So those would be my focal point. And if any of those are a no, I'd encourage them to wait, save, and not buy too much house and get overextended. I hope that helps, Steve. We appreciate your call today, sir. God bless you. Well, that's going to do it for us. Big thanks to my team today, Devin, Sandy, Jim. Couldn't do it without them, and everybody here at FaithFi. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.